Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It has been a great honour to be an MP these last 12 years. I've been lucky to have been here during the MMP era in a much more representative parliament. And I'm pleased that the way MMP has been improving with new innovations like ministers outside cabinet, which enables smaller parties to take on ministerial roles without submerging their political differences with the bigger party. Smaller parties now get a better hearing, and the Greens have been able to achieve some policy gains like the home insulation scheme without any formal support arrangement with the government. My suggestion to refine MMP further is to remove the fiction of an official opposition with a leader of the opposition, which is a hangover from the two-party system. It doesn't belong in a multi-party parliament where the parties vote for and against bills in different combinations. Also out of date is the Christian prayer, which begins parliament's business each day. We need a more inclusive secular statement, given that half of the members in this House are not religious or of another faith. I do commend the improvements made to question time under speakers Jonathan Hunt, Margaret Wilson and you, Mr. Speaker. You've taken that bold new step of actually requiring ministers to answer direct questions. I think we now have one of the best parliamentary question periods in the world, if not the best. Sometimes the shine is taken off question time by excessive noise as members shout across the floor, and I've been amazed that this continues when every MP knows that no one outside this chamber appreciates this. The continuing rowdiness also hides another achievement of MMP during my time in Parliament, and that is the greater cooperative spirit and willingness to work together across party lines to progress political issues. I get a particular kick out of working successfully with parties furthest from the Greens in general philosophy. A few years ago, I organised a joint public protest meeting with Rodney Hyde, which helped to halt government plans for a new waterfront stadium in Auckland, which would have visually mucked up what is now developing into a nice waterfront area. I also arranged a joint press conference with ACT plus United Future and the Māori Party to hurry up the repeal of the sedition laws, which we quickly achieved. Not everything I did regarding Rodney Hyde went to plan. Not least my bet in 2005 carried on national TV to walk down Broadway naked if he won the Ipsum seat. Of course, Rodney won with the help of a certain then National Party leader, Don Brash. I had no option but to carry through on my promise, treating it as a golden opportunity to showcase the talents of one of New Zealand's foremost body artists, Phil Duchard. I'm now less into gambling, although I'm tempted to put something on the Warriors winning the NRL Grand Final this Saturday. Another one of my successful cross-party political liaisons was with United Future leader Peter Dunn in the National Party to oppose provisions in the Births, Deaths and Marriages Bill, which would have drastically reduced public access to genealogical records. Peter Dunn and I made a joint submission to the Select Committee, which helped convince the then Labor government that they had to rewrite the whole bill. This obscure bill may have directly benefited more New Zealanders than anything else I've done in Parliament, because so many Kiwis are researching their family history. As you might expect, I've worked with Labor on lots of issues. Coming from a strong trade union background, I've enjoyed operating as part of a Green and Labor tag team in the House when anti-union laws come before us, as they too frequently do. In most of my human rights work, the Māori and Mana parties have been good allies. Alongside the Greens, they've recognised how the laws and practices generated by the so-called War on Terror erode our civil liberties. More New Zealanders see that now. It wasn't so easy in the immediate aftermath of 9/11, when for the Greens I was advocating peaceful solutions, opposing the war on Afghanistan and saying that we shouldn't rush to adopt the Terrorism Suppression Act. Unfortunately, when New Zealand brought into a war on terror, it had to come up with some terrorists, and in the absence of any in New Zealand, innocent people like Algerian refugee Ahmed Zawi were targeted. I take great satisfaction that Ahmed Zawi and his family are now well settled in New Zealand and that I played a role in the five-year campaign to achieve this. And I'm honoured that Mr. Zawi and his son are present with us today. When people ask me what I've achieved, I always say that I can only take part of the credit for any of the successes. My role has been to advocate the causes on the parliamentary stage. In the Ahmed Zawi case, while I played an important role, most of the credit has to go to the many fair-minded citizens who campaigned long and hard for Mr. Zawi's freedom, his excellent lawyers Deborah Manning and Rondi Harrison, as well as a new SIS director, Warren Tucker, who finally concluded that there wasn't a case. And I also have Dr. Tucker to thank for my SIS file, which will be a useful reference work for the history writing I plan to do in my retirement. Politically, the thing that has most saddened me has been the ease with which legislation giving the police or SIS more powers, or legislation extending sentences for crimes, passes through this Parliament. Now we have anti-terrorism laws we don't need and our jails are overflowing. I appeal to Parliament to try and find the brake pedal or even, gasp, the reverse gear. It would be good in this respect to send a parliamentary delegation to Scandinavia to investigate how shorter sentences and an emphasis on rehabilitation actually works in reducing crime. Norway is providing a great example to the world when it reacted to the recent mass killing with a march where people carried roses and pledged not to turn Norway into a security state. On several issues, I've looked more to Scandinavia than the Anglo nations like America, Britain and Australia. For the last 12 years, I've been a green battler for New Zealand to be more independent in foreign affairs and defence, building on what we achieved in leaving ANZUS and becoming nuclear free. And there have been some successes. I can take some credit for helping create the political climate where Helen Clark could scrap the Air Combat Force, which was only of use for fighting what Nikki Haga has termed other people's wars. Now we only have to get rid of the two remaining frigates to be left with a navy more relevant to our practical defence tasks in the South Pacific and the Southern Ocean. There is an independent pioneering spirit within most New Zealanders, which grates against subordination to American dictates. Many New Zealanders now rightly question whether America's war in Afghanistan should be our war. One of the reasons I'm so passionate about the need for New Zealand to take an independent stance is that the big Western powers are failing to address so many of the world's problems, from climate change and the debt crisis to development needs and nuclear disarmament. New Zealand can play a vital political leadership role in the world, working together with other independent players such as Norway and Sweden, or emerging nations like Turkey and Brazil. I've often accused our government of being too timid in standing up to big countries on peace and human rights issues. To make the point, I've often resorted to symbolic protest. I've waved Tibetan and Papuan flags on the steps of Parliament, presented a nuke-free New Zealand badge to Hillary Clinton, she was rather startled, and presented a letter from anti-war groups to Tony Blair. I once wore a scarf made up of Chinese and Tibetan flags to a reception for the Chinese Premier. Now at state dinners, I seem to be allocated the seat furthest away from the top table. If we're to be a truly independent nation, I don't see how we can remain chained to the British monarchy. Even though my head of state referenda bill failed to get a majority in the House last year, I did put the issue into the parliamentary arena and there is now a cross-party Republican caucus in this House. Most MPs recognise that we can't stay a monarchy forever. why not be bolder and bring about the change, even if it does upset a minority of constituents still attached to the royal family? I've also enjoyed being an Auckland MP and being part of Auckland's evolution into a considerably more tolerant, bicultural and multicultural town. Auckland's public transport system has also improved, but there wouldn't have been the transport snarl-up on the first day of the World Cup if governments had been listening more closely 10 years ago to the pleas I and other Greens were making for more investment in Auckland's rail. I'd like now to pay a tribute to all those wonderful Green MPs I've had the privilege of working alongside during my 12 years in Parliament. And it's great to have Jeanette Fitzsimons with me here today, along with Nicola and Holly Donald, the partner and daughter of the much-missed Rod Donald. Rod and Jeanette led us through the difficult times of consolidating the Green presence in Parliament and in the public consciousness. It wasn't an easy ride. Initially, we were dismissed as either utopian dreamers or dangerous extremists. Sometimes the labels seemed mutually contradictory, such as when I was dismissed as both a Stalinist and a weak-kneed peacenik in the same breath. I've never particularly minded the peacenik label. It's much easier now because public opinion has moved much closer to the Green way of looking at things, which is one reason why we're going up in the polls. We now have a much stronger Green Party, and I would like to pay a big tribute to all the Green members who worked so hard to get out the Green message. The Green office staff have been fantastic over the years, too many to mention, but I particularly want to thank my dedicated executive assistant, Claire, my advisor, Kevin, and Lucy, Ivan and Karen in the Auckland office. Some have said that it won't be the same now you originals have gone, but I have great faith that the expanded team that will emerge from the election, ably led by Russell Norman and Ngāti Ture, will take Green politics to a higher level. I'm very happy today to have my brother Don and sisters Myrie and Alison with us, and most of their families. They've all been so supportive of me over these years, and of course my wonderful partner Michelle, who has helped me right through this parliamentary journey and over all the rocky patches, and she's also assisted with an exceptional political judgment to keep me on the right path. People will say, will you miss Parliament? And I say, yes. It has been my other family these past 12 years. And as if to reinforce this point, one of my young great-nieces calls me Uncle Parliament. Thanks to the MPs from all parties, I've enjoyed your company and friendship, and all the parliamentary staff, clerks, librarians, Hansard recorders, ushers, messengers, security, select committee workers, you name it, and particularly the cleaners, who don't get much more than the minimum wage when we MPs are paid so well. To all my friends in the press gallery, thanks for your professionalism and for giving me a fair go. In my maiden speech, I said that I saw my role first and foremost as a representative of all those active community groups who are pushing good causes, from better public transport to humane treatment for refugees, from organic farming to nuclear disarmament. And one of the great things about this house is that it has a big front lawn so that community protests can be brought to the steps of Parliament. And I've been regularly out on those steps speaking in support of the protesters on the grass on every type of issues. Sometimes I didn't know the protesters were coming until I spied them on Parliament grounds from our offices on the 15th floor of Bowen House, and I rushed down and quickly constructed a speech on the particular issue, such as on one recent occasion addressing the plight of the persecuted Assyrian Christians in Iraq. I didn't quite know they were coming, but... So, if you want to catch up with me after I've left Parliament, you might sometimes find me among the protesters on the grass, really with a bit of helpful advice for Parliament. Or you might find me across the road in the National Library researching a political history project. Thanks to all of you. I'll miss you. Ka kite anō.